Okay. We're in Einaya, Shalom, Piska Samach Gimel, 63, on Masechet Shabbat, in Rav Kook's commentary on the Agadat of the Gemara. And we saw last week, we'll start with the beginning of the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis teach us, Mi katav Megillat Ta'anit? Who wrote down the Megillat Ta'anit? As we said, these were a bunch of holidays, especially during the Second Temple, where when there was a victory, a military victory, they would establish a new holiday, something along the lines of Yom HaTzmaut or Yom Yerushalayim. Amru Hananya v'Siyata Oshayu mechavvin et hatzarot. And we won't go over what we did last week, but Rav Kook, as opposed to Rashi, Rav Kook explains that you have to look at the positive aspects of tzarot, of troubles. And we spoke about the idea that troubles migabesh, they mold groups, they mold the nation of Israel, they cause unity, and a bunch of other things. Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Af anu mechavavina tatzarot. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says that we also appreciate the tzarot in our time as well. But we can't write down all of our tzarot because we wouldn't be able to write them all down. In other words, it's not just like in the olden days they would appreciate the tzarot, or according to Rashi, they would appreciate the geula, but there are just so many tzarot that we have today and that we can't write them all down. Yeah.
But my understanding here is they weren't writing down the tzarot, they were writing down the victories.
Oh, that's the machloket between the first commentary in Rashi and the second commentary. Let's see it inside. Enu namaspikim lifi shehin tadirot. The first explanation of Rashi is because we have so many tzarot, so many troubles, we can't write them down. Lishna achrina, second explanation. Enanu maspikim milasod yom tov b'chol yom. We can't celebrate all of the holidays, all of the salvations, because we're saved so often. And these are really the two possible commentaries. And also last week in Rashi, we saw that he talks about the salvation. Rav Kook talks about the tzarot. And here Rashi brings them both down. Okay?
I'm sorry, but my understanding from last week is the whole, if you want to call it machloket, between Rashi and Rav Kook, was that just on the very narrow phrases of chavivin tzarot,
yeah.
Whether it means that you love pain or you love the salvation from pain,
mm-hmm.
but nevertheless, the actual details written inside the Megillat Ta'anit, I thought was not a machloket.
Correct.
It's all only about good things.
Correct. But the term, that's the what we spoke about last time, is the term mechavivin tatzarot. Today, what Rashi is talking about, enanu maspikin, there are two explanations. Again, one, that we can't write down all of the tzarot, or that we can't write down all the salvations. But those are the two commentaries.
What would it mean to write down the tzarot? That's what I'm asking. Like, what would they be writing about?
You're asking what's the difference between the first explanation and the second explanation?
No, what I'm asking is, if you're talking about now writing down tzarot,
yeah.
What does that mean? What would they be writing about? Writing a Megillah all about all the bad things that happen? Is that what it's talking about?
That's my answer would be yes, but that's not what Megillat Ta'anit is about. And if it's about the salvation, so what's the difference between the first explanation and the second explanation? You know what I think? It's a good question. I think the difference is, in the second explanation, the stress is on there aren't enough days in the calendar. In other words, we can't celebrate a new holiday every single day. And that would be the stress on a lack of days. The first explanation is probably also talking about the salvation, because that's what Megillat Ta'anit is about. I understand, that's what's behind your question. So I guess that's the difference between the first and the second explanation. That the first is has the stress on the tzarot, and the second is about the number of days. Okay? Anyway, let's see what Rav Kook has to say. Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Af anu mechavavin et hatzarot, we can't write down all of the tzarot that we have today, or all of the salvation from tzarot that we have today. What does it mean today? Rav Kook says it's talking about as opposed to the normal situation where Am Yisrael in its natural situation Be'artza is living in the land of Israel Uvekoach Mamlachta, we have an independent state She'afal pishu rabim kamu alea v'tzarea hitziku lama'od. Just like during the time of the Second Commonwealth when Megillat Ta'anit was written down, when they used to set new holidays, we always had problems. The Jewish people always had enemies. We spoke about this before. Rav Kook says it's built into our job as an Or LaGoyim. They're just like people resent their conscience. People don't like feeling guilty. People don't like the prophets. They assassinated Yeshayahu. They tried to kill Yirmiyahu. And as Pascal said, we are the conscience of mankind, and that's why the world doesn't like the Jewish people. The same thing when we had a land. Now, when we had a land and we had an independent state, that was just another reason to attack the Jews, because there were also four borders, right? It's a good thing we have the western border, we have the sea. So we have three directions from where enemies can come from. And, Professor Eli Tzur has a very interesting ma'amar of why God gave us Eretz Yisrael. And part of the idea is that geographically, in the old days, the cradle of civilization, or the Fertile Crescent, the ancient world was always based on that there was one superpower in the north and one superpower in the south. In the south, it was always Egypt. In the north, they were always fighting amongst each other. And there was a Toranut. Once it was Babylon on top, next time Ashur, next time Paras, next time Madai, Aram. There was always one superpower in the north, another superpower in the south. And as was accepted in the olden days, if you were a superpower, you wanted to conquer the whole world. So the south wanted to go through Israel to conquer the north. The superpower of the north wanted to go through Israel to conquer Egypt in the south. And Israel was caught right in the middle. And in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, he turned it into an advantage. Because what he did, something very ingenious, right? Egypt was the master at the time of raising horses and chariots, or what the military call today tanks. Horse and chariot, that was like the tank of the old day. And when Paras and Ashur and Babel and Aram, when they were always fighting it out in the north, how were they fighting it? They had to keep buying tanks and horses, chariots, from Egypt in the south in order to fight with each other. Now Shlomo said, I'm not a sucker. I know that you can use those chariots against me also, because I'm the land of Israel, is right in the middle. So what he did is he said something along the lines that for every chariot and horse that a northern country will buy from Egypt, if you want to pass through my land, you have to give me two. And that's how Shlomo built a very formidable army very, very quickly. And it became a superpower. So that the land of Israel is fantastically situated if you're strong, and it's terribly situated if you're weak. And but the sandwich that was always in existence, the geopolitical sandwich with us in the middle, that's what Rav Kook is talking about, that aside from being the conscience of mankind and making the goyim feel guilty, etc., etc., when you have an independent state, obviously you're going to have enemies which bother you, right? They want to take your land, your oil, whatever. Mikomakom haita hatzara, in other words, so what is Rav Kook saying till now? He's saying that it's true that when we're in our natural situation in the land of Israel with the Beit HaMikdash and with our independent state, yes, we had problems. And the goyim also bothered us. Mikol makom hayta tzara klalit efsharit likatev basefer. But there weren't so many problems that you couldn't write them down. Why? Gam hayta efsharut lavo ad tchunata ve'omka. Another aspect, that you could solve the problems. You could, what's called in the army, hafakat lekachim. You could learn your lesson from the tzarot and fix it next time, because when you're independent, the cards are in your hands. You can attack first, you can fire the first shot, you can make a peace agreement, you can strengthen your economy, you can weaken somebody else's economy, that's the beauty of independence. And as the Maharal writes, life is independence, also on the individual and also on the national. Right? I think we spoke about this once, that Rav Kook writes a lot about this in his commentary on the Haggadah, about what is Zman Chirutenu, the time of our independence, of our freedom. He says that life is freedom, free will. A person who is a slave, i.e. he has no free will, is not living a normal life. And he gives an example. Chazal say that ani chashuv kemet, a poor person, and also suma, a blind person, they're both considered dead. Why? The Maharal explains, because they're not independent. A blind person needs help to cross the street. A poor person has to think twice before he buys a can of Coke, right? He can't do whatever he wants. That is not a normal life. Because life, as opposed to animals who don't have free will, and angels who don't have free will, the whole uniqueness of man is that we do have free will, as long as you're independent. And that's why, when we're adolescents, we like to learn to feel independence. I'm sure Hillel, our psychologist, could give a whole talk on the why in the terrible twos, when kids are toilet training, they begin to feel their independence, their shlita, right? I'm in control. When we hit adolescence, again, don't tell me what to do. I'm in control. That is human nature. And the same thing on a national level. The most natural thing in life, in national life, is to be independent. That we, in the land of Israel, we decide when we're going to have daylight savings time, right? If it's going to be before Yom Kippur, we're going to take it off after, before Leil HaSeder, right? If we're going to subsidize potatoes during the holiday of Pesach, it's all up to, even Har HaBayit, right? Our government, in their weakness, they decided to leave the mosque on Har HaBayit. But it's up to us to decide. We could decide to take it down, we could decide to leave it up. That is the essence of life, of the individual, and also as the nation. Don't tell us what to do. And that's why Rav Kook is saying, even though we did have tzarot during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, and there were wars, but we were in charge. We could learn our lessons. We had the cards were in our hands to decide. And that's totally different than the situation in Galut. When we're in the land of Israel, just look at 60 years of the history of the state of Israel. We have about a war every decade, one war every decade, about, right? In 48, 56, 67, 73, 82, right? About once every decade. But you can point to it, you can point at the war and say there were problems X, Y, and Z. It built to, it reached a head, a climax. It blew up, and thank God we won the war. But you can point at the war. It's not a date-to-date tzara like we have in the Galut, okay? And that's why when we were independent, we established new holidays. We said on this and this day, you don't fast and you don't eulogize, like Yom HaTzimut and Yom Yerushalayim. Again, that's exactly what we do today. We have new holidays. Aval achar hachurban, but after the destruction, she'uma kula tova'at b'yam shel tzarot. I think Rav Kook here is doing a play on words between TV and tova'at. It's really the same shorish, ted bet ayin. He says, when we're in Eretz Yisrael and we're independent, remember Rav Kook died in Tafresh Tzarihei, 13 years before the independent state of Israel. He saw it on the way, but he didn't get to see it. So he's really talking in the past. He's saying, when we were in our natural situation, when we had an independent state, that was natural, TV. Today, it's not natural, it's not TV, it's Tovea. We're drowning in the ocean of tzarot. Hello, kafi godel chalalam shel achayim ken gadlu hatzarot. If you look at the size of life, the vacuum of life, every single aspect of life suffers because of the galut. We can't start counting wars or counting crises. All of life is one long 2,000-year-old crisis. There are so many individual crises. Every single individual Jew, wherever he lives, misibat churbana uma kula v'shifluta niduda v'tiltula. Just look at work. A Jew in a lot of countries wasn't allowed to own land. He wasn't allowed to be a member of the workers' guild. He wasn't allowed to live outside the ghetto. He wasn't accepted to university. You could spit on a Jew. Nobody could defend himself. Not talking about rape, kidnapping, taking the Jews, drafting them, you know, for 25 years into the Tsar's army. And it's a vicious cycle, because as soon as you can't work in a normal job, remember, most of the goyim at the time, they were farmers. A Jew wasn't allowed to buy land in Russia, so what's he going to do? He has to work as an artisan. So if he was going to work, but he's not accepted to the workers' guild. So what does he do? He becomes a moneylender. That was the big... Now, so we were the moneylenders, and we were basically pushed into the role of Shylock, right? When you're a moneylender, you have a lot of enemies, right? Or look at the relations between the Jews and the blacks in New York, where the Jews came to New York a little before the blacks. They bought apartments. Eventually, when they moved out to the suburbs, they became the landlords. They were the teachers. They were the principals. They were the hated. And that's in the B'mikra HaTov. Usually it was that we had to pay off to the protection money to the parits, they used to call them in Yiddish. How did you say that in English?
The fruit squad.
The what?
The fruit squad.
No, it was usually in Europe, it was usually there was like one wealthy...
Count or something.
Count. It was like he was like the governor of the area. He was the biggest bully. He would tell the Jews, you know, I will protect you from the masses if you pay me, you know, millions and millions of gold. And the Jews were always paying up until the most classic scenario. When were Jews expelled from each country in Europe?
When they ran out of money.
When the Jews ran out of money, or what was even more common was after the count borrowed so much money from Jews. Remember, Christians right. Did not lend with rebate, with interest from each other. So what did they do? They would borrow money from the Jew. So a count, if he wants to go to war, he wants to invest, I don't know, build a big building, he would borrow a lot of money from the Jews, but then he couldn't pay it back. So what did he do? He expelled the Jews. And usually, after another 100 years or so, he saw that he was suffering more economically than he was gaining, so he decided to call the Jews back. He didn't have to pay back his loans, but can you imagine living? The Jew was forced to be a shyster. He had, the goyim would tax us left and right, and would draft us left and right. And the Jew, you read stories of how the Jews would bribe, and how they would buy themselves out of the army, and buy false identities, and cut off their pinkies, and do crazy things. Rav Aviner tells a story, I think I mentioned it once, how his great-grandfather, found this trick that if you take a long, thin candle and you stick it slowly into your eardrum, you can relatively painlessly break your eardrum, but you will then be exempt from the army. And Jews would do anything.
The army, by the way, I don't know if the army is a good example, because I think as far as the army is, because everyone was sort of drafted, but the Jews got worked their way out of it more, because I think the Russian army is always like that. I think it was just more that
it was the helpless. The helpless were always drafted. If you had protectia,
yeah,
and
but the Jews, even within the Jews, there was also the question of, you know,
of kidnapping. But that's again, that's a classic example. I think we mentioned last week. Chazal say on the pasuk Vayareyu Otanu Amitzrim, that they turned us into evil people because we had to kidnap each other, and we. I saw, there's an interesting book, I forgot her name. She's a journalist, she wrote for many years for the Jerusalem Post.
No?
She's originally from Boston. No, the previous generation. I'm talking about in the 60s and 70s. I forgot her name. She wrote a book called Another Beginning, or A New Beginning. No? A New Beginning. And she writes about her experiences in Aliyah. And she just describes very nicely that when she, after working a couple years at the Jerusalem Post, she got the guts up to approach the editor and ask him for a raise. Her boss asked him for a raise. And as she was preparing for the interview, she realized that for a decade she was working as a journalist for a newspaper in Boston, and never did she ever dare ask for a raise. And she finally put her finger on it, that because she didn't want to be accused of being a money-hungry Jew. Mm. These are small things that I remember in growing up, and even in New York, you know, which is relatively Jewish. You know, there's certain areas where you don't walk around in a kippah. Or I remember the Irish kicking us all out of the off the basketball courts, you know, because they're bigger than we are. And, you know, Jews, kikes, get off the court, you know. And we were there first. You know, why should we move? But it's the type of thing that, not to mention when they used to laugh at us when we would walk our lulav, with our lulav and etrog to shul on Sukkot, and they'd laugh, hey, you know, what do you got in your hand? And these small things, we're not talking about a big war, right? When I got beaten up by, still remember his name, Kevin Clifford. big Irish guy in Riverdale. That was not a national event. And even if I was saved from his hand, I'm not going to make a national holiday. But that is everyday life. For 2,000 years, one tzaras leads to another, and it affects everything that you do. Whether it be, can we go to this doctor, or can we not go to this doctor? Always looking over your shoulder, being accused of this, being, can I ask for a raise, not ask for a raise? You know, No, I remember I always wanted to take the A train because there's less chance of getting beaten up on the A train than on the one train. Right? You know, give me a break. And after you make Aliyah, you just breathe easier. And you don't even think about all these small things that are part of living in exile. I'm talking about America, which is a haven, you know, compared to Europe, compared to everywhere else.
As good as Galut gets.
Yeah, it's as good as Galut gets, exactly. Nevertheless, Rav Kook says, life was hell. And we couldn't, every single aspect of life is affected by Galut, and therefore for 2,000 years we can't start writing down our tzarut nor our salvations, because they're not big salvations. You know, b'mikre hatov, okay, you weren't beaten up here, who knows what's going to be tomorrow, right? So you managed to get out of Poland safely and you run to Germany. Managed to get out of Germany safely, you run to America. Managed to get out, you're always running around and you know that there's no permanent solution.
There's a personal aspect to that, where there's a mitzvah to say a bracha, shasali neis b'makom hazeh.
Correct.
You're supposed to be remembering.
Correct. If it's an individual center, but right. That's not a national. We're talking here about Megillat Tanit, which is national Yamim Tovim. Huh? Imken, hayeshev sharut le'et sofer lichtov, could any pen of any author write down all of the tsarot, all of the discrimination, all of the everything? And I was just talking the other day with somebody about the 1936 Olympics. Anybody who knows trivia remembers Jesse Owens. That was Jesse Owens' Olympics. And it was Yimach Shemo Hitler's Olympics. That's why they were in Berlin. He wanted to show the world that the Germans are the evolutionary, the fittest of the survival of the fittest. They're God's gift, right? So everybody remembers Joe Lewis against Max Schmeling. And in the 36 Olympics, Max Schmeling beat the black Joe Lewis, and Hitler was ecstatic. But before the scenes, if you really know trivia, you know that Hitler told Avery Brundage, who was the head of the Olympic Committee for like 40 years, I still remember him in the 70s, he was the one on the Munich massacre who said the show must go on. We will not let a terrorist attack stop the show of the Olympics. He was the same Avery Brundage, if I remember correctly, who in the 1936 Olympics was told by Hitler, don't bring blacks or Jews to the Olympics. And Avery Brundage had the guts to stand up to Hitler and said, you won't tell us not to bring our blacks to the Olympics. What about the Jews? They stayed home. Sam Bolter was the star of the UCLA basketball team. He was going to be the captain of the American basketball team. He did not participate because he was Jewish. And America gave in to the boycott against Jews. They weren't willing to give up on the blacks because...
You wouldn't get any medals.
Right, because Jesse Owens was black. And they thought that Joe Lewis would also beat Max Schmeling. But the Jews, they were willing to give up on. And I'm just saying... The more I think about it, the more examples of discrimination. And again, that's in America. That's the best that a galut could get. And imagine how things were. There was, not to be accepted to university. That's like Mark Twain, you know, when he writes his famous article about the Jews. You know, the Jew has made a miraculous survival and has given more to mankind than any other race. And he's done it with his hands tied behind his back. Right? That's a great line. Right? And Bikitsur, we can't even write. Halo chalalam shelachayim rachav hu ma'od. Right? If we were to look at every single aspect of life, from our family life to our economy, to asking for a raise, to health, you know, to anti-Semitism, to buying land, all of life was affected for 2,000 years. Mashikatzar kol sefer mistarei alav b'shleimuto v'kulom malei tzaroteim shel Yisrael shiflut uboz oni v'choli u'madve. Right, Rav Kook doesn't go into historical details, but the lowliness, the downtroddenness, being degraded, being poor. Right, all of these things that, despite the fact that Jews, Baruch Hashem, relatively were successful, they could have been a lot more successful if we would have been allowed to enter these fields. So we were poor, relatively. Choli, or there's Chazal saying, or is it Nadarim, that all of the women of Israel are beautiful, were not for the Galut. The Galut makes us ugly. Darim ve'aprat, on a national level, on an individual level, tzibur ve'amishpacha. You can't live a normal family life if you can't make a normal living. Look at my wife's family. Her grandfather spent 7 years away from home in order to make money to bring the rest of the family to America. That's not normal. You know, this idea of jumping around from country to country to country, making money to center, that's not normal. People, Italians stay in Italy, and they always were in Italy, and Japanese were always in Japan. You don't jump around, right? Well, and that obviously bothered our family life as well. Okay. And all of this comes back to the problem of one word, exile. Exile was hell. Imken, so great to be able to read this piska, living in an independent Jewish state. Imken, im navo achshav lichtov tzarot pratiot. If we begin to write our individual tzarot, since the Churban, since the exile, halo nireh davar kilu atzarot haklaliyot atmidiyot shenoshchot ke'eres nachash midei yom biyomo et Beit Yisrael et ele shachachnu. If we begin to write individual salvations and individual tzarot, and we're going to totally forget the big tzarot, which is, in one word, exile. Kirak mikrim bodedim nirsham alei sefer. Right, we don't have wars. We don't have big salvations. There's nothing that you can really pinpoint. You know, somebody once asked me, you know, based on the sources in Megillah Kuf Yud Gimel, which talk about, you know, saying Hallel on designating new holidays like Yom HaTzmaut, Yom Yerushalayim. So somebody asked me, a student once asked me, why don't we say Hallel on the end of the Holocaust? You know, on what is it called? D-Day, right?
V-E-Day,
right? And, you know, there wasn't that much to celebrate, you know? Okay, even if a person happened to be saved, and his wife and kids and parents and mother and house and nothing that remains, there's not that much to celebrate. Al ken lanu I efshar, we, Rabbi Shmuel ben Gamliel says, in exile, we can't write down the holidays of salvation, make new holidays of salvation. We wouldn't be able to write them all down. Okay.